next session number 24611, real one.
Mr. David Campbell, real one. Can you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Campbell?
I was born in Edinburgh on the 29th of June, 1925.
Could you tell us a bit about your family background, your parents, what they did for a living?
Well, my parents, my father, he was a head barman and then became a manager of one of the public houses in Edinburgh. I have had four sisters. One who I didn't see, as she died long before I was born. My other sisters, who are much older than me, I was the youngest of the family. One stayed out of Edinburgh, and she worked in a factory out at a place called Newbridge. My middle sister worked in a print place in Hanover Street in Edinburgh. And my other sister, the one next to me, she was the personal secretary to Lady Lauderdale down in Lauder.
Now, was it a fairly comfortable upbringing? You know, I mean, your father was in steady employment.
Was in steady employment all the time.
And whereabouts in Edinburgh were you living?
I stayed in the south side of Edinburgh, where I was born. And we moved from there when I was about 7 years old to new houses, which were built then on the outskirts of Edinburgh.
Now, what about your education? Tell us a bit about your education.
My education, I stayed at Southbridge School for approximately 2 years. Then went on to Stenhouse School. I was there for about another 3 years, and then my folks moved back into town again, and I went to Leithwalk School.
How did you do at school? Did you have any particular favourite subjects? Or
my favourite subject at school was art. And I used to love gymnastics. I left there and went on to my senior school, which I left when I was 14 years old.
Did you have any hobbies outside school? I mean, were you in the Boy Scouts, Boys Brigade, anything like
that? I was in the Boy Scouts.
What kind of activity?
I was in the Cubs first, and then, as I grew older, went on to the Boy Scouts.
What kind of activities did they organise, and in particular, how military were they? Because we're quite interested in the Boy Scouts.
Well, actually, the Boy Scouts weren't military. We used to have a hut out on the River Amund, about 8 miles from Edinburgh, and we used to go out there on weekends and stay there. We had a canoe which we used up and down the canal as a recreation, and we used to play an awful lot of football, just kicking a ball about. When we attended the meetings, which took place on a Friday, we used to play gyms. We were taught different knots, and in the summertime we went to camp all over the place, and we had a great time at camp. In 1937-38, I went out to a scout meet, which took place at Monsey Castle near Crieff. And there were scouts from all over the world. It was a jamboree, where I got the signature of, he was a prince then, King Gustav Emmanuel.
So that was one of your big hobbies. Any other big hobbies?
I used to draw an awful lot.
What about sport? Was that a big thing with you? Or Just kick about.
I just kick about. I used to go to ice skating a lot. I ice skated quite a bit.
Now, you left school just about the same time as the Second World War started, don't you?
I left school in the summer holidays, and the war started on September.
Had you got a job straight away? Or
I got a job straight away.
And how did you get the job? How did you know? Because
there was a man who stayed in the same stair, got me the job, because he knew I was leaving school, and he asked if I wanted a job, and I said yes.
And what job did you take?
Well, it was a messenger's job at first, and then I went on to become a warehouseman.
For who?
For John Lyne and Sons, the wallpaper manufacturers. From that job, I went to another firm in Queen Street.
Another wallpaper?
The same trade, wallpaper. More money, better hours. As we worked then a 5-day week, which was unknown up here at the time.
And what was your work, basically?
Well, I was a stock clerk.
And did you enjoy the work?
Yes, I did. Very much. We worked a 5-day week, and the firm were very, very good to us. They took us on a long weekend down to Leeds. And we went from Leeds, we stayed in Leeds in a hotel, and we went from Leeds to Blackpool for the day. Going down, they had hired a Pullman coach. And coming back, it was a Pullman coach. All expenses paid, which was thoroughly enjoyable.
Now, what about the outbreak of war? Do you remember the day that the war broke out?
I do. I was working on my first job at the time, and I remember the planes coming across when the siren sounded, and we were standing on the roof watching the planes trying to bomb the Forth Bridge, and the British planes diving down on them. That's as clear as day, that memory.
And that was September, was it?
That was September. September, just after the war started, it was.
Did the war affect your lives much? I mean, I'm thinking of air raid precautions, things like that. Did you have much of that in Edinburgh?
Not really. We had one or two raids, but really nothing to speak about. There was one or two bombs dropped and some people killed. But nothing like what Glasgow or London or Coventry got. Glasgow was the main target on the Clyde. As they used to call the River Forth a hell valley because of the guns that were protecting the naval ships in the Forth. And it was Glasgow, Clydebank, that got the blitz. But Edinburgh, there was a few bombs in Edinburgh. At the time, the house we stayed in, we had a private laundry down at the bottom of the tenement, for the use of the tenement people only. And all these windows were blown in by the blast of the bombs, but that was as far as it got. Shop windows were blown in. A landmine dropped down in Leith, which blasted a tenement to bits and killed one or two people. A few incendiary bombs, but really nothing that we could really say was a blitz.
And what about rationing? How did that affect you? Food rationing in particular?
Well, it wasn't too bad. At that time, I was a vegetarian. And I never, ever liked butter. So what happened was that I used to give the butter to my mother, who used to love butter. She wouldn't take margarine. So we got on all right. It wasn't too bad. I smoked at the time. Cigarettes were bad to get. Sweets, they went on ration. They were bad to get. A lot of the fruit, like of bananas, oranges, they were non-existent. You just couldn't get them for love nor money. You made do with different things. They brought onto the market Spam from America, which I liked, although quite a number of people didn't like it.
As a vegetarian?
Yes, I liked it. And I think from then on, I started to like the taste of the meat.
How would you come to be a vegetarian? Because, you know, it's quite unusual at that time.
I just couldn't chew meat. It seemed to stick at the back of my throat. And I always used to have to cough it up again. I couldn't swallow it. I just didn't like it.
But you sort of grew out of it.
I grew out of it as I grew older.
What about clothing rationing? Did that bother you much?
Not really. I've always been very, very careful with my clothes. It didn't really bother me. My father, he got most of the coupons because of him working behind a bar, etc. And I was supplied with an overall in my job, which saved my clothes quite a bit.
And any other ways in which the war affected you before you were in the services?
Not really. Everything was quiet. I joined the police. I was in the police for 2 years. Started off as a police messenger.
This is voluntary work?
Started off as a volunteer.
Now, when did you start with them? You didn't leave the wallpaper manufacturers, though, to do it, did
Pardon?
You? Did you leave the wallpaper manufacturers to do it?
I left the wallpaper manufacturers, uh-huh.
So, when was this?
End of 1941, it would be, approximately.
And what were your duties as a police messenger?
As a police messenger, well, we were training, although I was a police messenger, we were taught police duties over and above that. During the raids, if any of the communications broke down, then you were used. But my duties then was to sit on the exchanges before the civilian girls came in to work them. And we used to get the warnings coming through from the observers that the German planes were going to raid. And we had a box on top of our exchange, our telephone exchange, with lights and switches on it, which connected to the air raid sirens on top of the police boxes throughout the Leith district. And you got a yellow warning. So what you did was you switched down and a yellow light came on. Stand by. Then you got the red warning. You had to disconnect all your lines from your exchange and plug into the emergency. Didn't matter who was speaking, chief constable, it made no difference. You just unplugged and you switched down every switch, and that put the sirens off, warning the general public there was an air raid. If one of the sirens didn't work, then there was an orange light came up on this box, and you switched on your reset button. If it still didn't work, then there was nothing more you could do except get an engineer after the raid was finished. So my mother used to say to me, "Are you going to sound the sirens tonight again, son?" Every time I went on night duty.
And where was your exchange? Was it the Leith Police Station?
In Leith Police Office, uh-huh.
And what other duties did you have as police messenger? Although it sounds like more an exchange worker, obviously.
The exchange work was in the morning before the girls came on at 8 o'clock and at night time after they went off at 6. We used to write down charge sheets if any prisoners were brought in. filling charge sheets, etc. And it's more or less office work inside the police office. Every morning, I used to go up to the head office in the high street and get what they called an information sheet and take it down to the office. It gave you a list of all stolen property. Then I had to go round the second-hand shops or the sale rooms and give them a copy of the list so that they would know if someone tried to sell something to them. They looked the list, that's on the list, that's stolen property. It was actually an information sheet.
Any other duties?
Pardon?
Any other duties?
Not really, that was mostly all office work.
Now, how long were you doing this for? You started that at the back end of 41.
Yeah, about roughly 2 years, because I went into the army in 1943.
Now, any other incidents you remember from your time as a police messenger?
Well, I was told to go out one day, or one night rather, and pick up this drunk man who was lying on the pavement. I really felt sorry for him, and I brought him in, but didn't put any charge on him, just sat him in this room and gave him coffee until he came to him and sent him home. We were supposed to charge him with drunk and disorderly, but the man was just lying there, not doing anyone any harm. So we didn't bother, I just sent him home again.
Now, had you thought of volunteering, or were you just waiting for your call-up?
I was waiting for my call-up.
And what happened? What was the procedure of your call-up? What do you remember?
Well, I was up collecting the information sheets from the head office, and coming home, I had to pass... coming to the office, I had to pass my home. And I saw my mother standing at the foot of the stair. I wondered why she was standing there, so I jumped off the tram car and went across. And she was crying, and I asked her what was wrong. She said, there is a line, she said, you have to report to Caterham. You've been called up into the army. And that was the first I knew about it. I hadn't a clue as to where Caterham was. It could have been in Hong Kong for all I knew. However, my father knew where it was.
How did you feel about being called up? I mean, were you worried or nervous or pleased?
I was excited at being called up. And, of course, innocent, I didn't know what war was about. So I was quite excited at going there.
Had your father served in the First World War?
Yes, yes.
Had he told you much about it?
No, my father never spoke about it. Never, ever spoke about it.
And about what month were you called up?
August 1943.
Now, what happened then? Did?
Well, I continued on my journey down to the office. When I finished at 2 o'clock that day, I came home, and I spoke to my father when he came home and asked him where Caterham was. And he told me. So when the day arrived that I was to leave, I asked my mother if she was coming to the station with me, and she said no. She didn't want to come to the station, but my father came to the station. So I left the house with my mother and my sisters all in tears and went up to the station with my father. We met another young fellow there with his dad, and they started to speak, and we found out that he was going to Caterham as well. So he and I got on the train, went down to Caterham. On arriving down there, we decided we would go for a drink. So we came out of Caterham station, looked around to see where there was a public house, and this soldier came up, asked us if we were for the guards depot. We said yes. Right, he said, into the truck. Being innocent about army life, we went into the truck. Found out later that he was only a truck driver in the army. He wasn't even an officer or a sergeant. which didn't go down very well because we were done out of our drink.
And what happened when you got to the... You were going to the guards' depot.
We went
you?
To the guards' depot at Caterham. And the, we signed in there. We were allocated a billet. Everything strange. Number of lads there, all strangers to each other. All wondered what was going to happen. And eventually this soldier, we didn't know who he was, but they found out later he was a sergeant major, came in and started to tell us what was going to happen and all the rest of it. Then we were marched to this billet and given battle dresses which were thrown at us.
What kit did you get? Do you remember what you got?
We got the army uniform, khaki uniform, and what would you call them? What is it called them again? We got denims and our army uniforms. Went back to our hut and put them on, killing ourselves laughing, as half the trousers were too long, the jackets were too wide, and we were exchanging jackets to try and see who's fitted best. Those who couldn't get a fit, it sent them to the tailors, and they were adjusted to fit them. We were issued with three planks of wood, three what they termed are called biscuits, which are just squares filled with straw, and two blankets, a pillow, and that was your bed. So the first day came round, we heard this bugle sound, and everyone looked at each other, what do we do now? So the sergeant comes in, get up your bed, out your bed, shouting and bawling. We couldn't understand what he was talking about. And we started to laugh. That made him worse. We had to get out of bed. We went for our breakfast. We were marched down for breakfast, marched back to the hut again, and told to polish the floor, take the beds out and scrub the pieces of wood that we were lying on until they were white. Then take them back again, and we were shown how to lay our uniform down on the bed in an order.
Do you remember it?
The boots which we were issued with, we had to polish the toe cap until it was shining. You could see your face in it. And polish the soles of the boots. The studs had to be polished as well, with not one piece of blackening on them. If they found out there was blackening on them, you were on a charge. It was quite strict. At the time, we didn't like it. But at the end of all the problems, we found out why and the reason that they gave us as to why they were so strict. It was just to make sure that if and when we went abroad into the fighting, that you would be able to take orders right away with no questions asked.
Now, what about the clean with the... Were you in barrack rooms or was it a hut?
A hut. At first, a hut.
And what was the hut like?
Just an ordinary square hut. Nothing with the beds and a wardrobe at the side of it for your clothes.
How many of you in there?
I would say approximately about 30 to 40 people in the hut. Just ordinary huts, wooden huts they were, at the side of the parade ground.
Now, what was perhaps a way of looking at the basic training, because that's what you were there for, is to look at a typical day and then pick off things as we go. What would a typical day's training be like?
Well, a typical day's training, after you scrubbed all your wooden beds, etc., and laid all your stuff out, you were marched on to the parade. and you were taught drill. Mostly marching up and down, left, turn, right, turn, about, turn, nearly for about an hour.
How did you take to drill? What did you think of it?
Well, at first it was quite funny because of the fact that when you got the order right turn, some of the boys didn't know the right hand from the left hand and they used to turn left, which naturally everyone was bumping into each other. That was to start off, but the smile was soon wiped off your face and the sergeant major started to shout at you. So after that, they used to take us out on marches, route marches, very short ones at first until you got accustomed to it. Then we had the rifle drill, how to salute with your rifle, how to stand with your rifle, slope arms, all the rest of it. We also had the training in firing them at Bisley on the rifle ranges.
Well, tell us about your rifle training, about the actual firing. Had you fired any guns before?
Yes. When I was in the police, we had half a dozen rifles issued to us, and we used to go to the Queen's Park, where there was at that time a rifle range, where we used to practice firing there.
Were so they full 303s, or were they?
Yes, a full 303. So we were used to a rifle. I was used to a rifle, but the some of the lads had never fired a rifle before, and when it kicked back, they used to hurt the shoulder, and they weren't used to it.
We were good shot. I mean, you can be, you know. I mean,
I was a marksman. I had the flags.
Now, what made you a good shot, do you think? Because I mean, some people could have lots of experience and still be a bad shot. What about you?
Nothing really. It's just a case of I had good eyesight. I had steady hands at that time, and that was the main thing: a steady hand and a straight eye.
Now, what about bayonet training? Did you do that?
Yes, uh-huh. We had bayonet training there where we used to push it into the sandbag and give it a turn and pull it out again. But you never ever satisfied the sergeants in charge.
Why not?
We were always in the wrong. They were always in the right.
Did you see the point in learning bayonet fighting, bayonet?
Not really. Not really, because of the fact that the well, the second front hadn't taken place, and what we had heard about the territorials, it was a case of there was no bayonet fighting there when the first went across to France. It was all long range firing their guns. So we thought, well, I mean, what's the sense of doing bayonets if you've got a gun? Shoot them first, and it saves you.
Were they doing all this business of shouting as you charged?
Yes. Used to charge. We had a bag hanging from a wooden contraption. I used to have to charge and stick the bayonet in and pull it out and run. And the next man did the same. And I'll tell you,